an important new book with amazing testimonies of life transformation. The title, Gay Awareness.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, I am thrilled to be back with you live today. We played yesterday special interviews that I did with Dr. James White about Islam, radical Islam. We played that yesterday for two reasons. One was in light of the Brussels terror attacks, those broadcasts were especially relevant. I know that many were helped by them the first time we played them, so the first time they aired live. So we played them for you yesterday. There was a second reason. I had come down sick, and what it was I got a cold and allergies at the same time. I was broadcasting on Monday, and as the day unfolded, I suddenly felt very sick, and I thought, that's odd. I don't get sick like this hardly anymore, just eating totally healthy the way I live. Everything felt strange, and I literally was doing the show because it's radio, it's not video most of the time. Literally, at times, I had my eyes closed and my head in my hands just to focus on radio, to focus on what I was doing, and to focus on the calls and everything. And the show went along normally, but I went home, got into bed, and was just kind of zonked. So yesterday, I was sick, didn't realize that. Once I realized I had allergies along with the cold, then I could address that and started to feel much, much better. So rather than try to get through the shows yesterday being subpar, I thought we've got some important broadcasts with Dr. White talking about Islam. So later today, in the second hour, I'm going to talk about radical Islam. So you can always listen to that by going to my website, askdrbrown.org, and clicking on latest broadcasts. I also wrote an article entitled Radical Islam is at War with the Rest of the World. So you can read that. That will give you further insights. Radical Islam is at war with the rest of the world. I give you data, I give you information, I give you understanding into the mindset of radical Islam. You will find that helpful. I even explain why I use the term radical Islam. Some say don't use it because all Islam is radical. Others say don't use it because radical Islam is not real Islam. Both objections are exaggerations, and I take that up in the article. All right. In a moment, presidential elections, of course, that's in the news. Donald Trump winning Arizona, Ted Cruz winning Utah. In each case, they get all the delegates. John Kasich getting zero delegates. Some ugly stuff going on with, well, I'm just going to leave that out right now, but stuff that ought not to be happening in a political campaign is happening right now. And Bernie Sanders winning 2 out of 3 states against Hillary Clinton. The plot continues to thicken. And it is the festival of Purim that's over a 2-day period. And we've got a video, a teaching video, where I'll share some things about that in the next day or so. So a lot going on, as always. But one quick lesson from the book of Esther. God's name is not mentioned anywhere in the book. God is not referred to anywhere in the book, and yet God is mightily at work. God is doing supernatural things and turning things upside down and turning them around, even though he is not mentioned anywhere in the book. What's that tell us? That even behind the scenes, God is working. That even when he hides his face, even when he is not acting in an overt way that everyone can say, this is the hand of God, it doesn't mean he's not moving. In fact, some of the most important and significant things he's doing are being done at times when we cannot see him or feel him. That's why we trust him and walk by faith, not by sight. You're going to hear something very powerful with my guest, Landon Schott, when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, I've just got one more moment while we connect with our guest, Landon Schott, with his new book, Gay Awareness. Just got one more moment, and I want to explain this about radical Islam, all right? 866-348-7884, as always, the number to call. There are some who say that all Islam is radical, that real Islam is what we see with ISIS, is what we see with Al-Qaeda, that's genuine expression of Islam. And any other form of it is not real, okay? Any other form of it is basically moderate, meaning liberal, meaning departing from the Quran, meaning not the real thing. Others say, no, ISIS is a complete aberration. ISIS is a complete and total aberration. ISIS is nothing to do with Islam. Let me say again, both of those positions are erroneous. Both of those positions are completely erroneous. Both of those positions are not based on a fair reading of the Quran and Islamic tradition. There is no question whatsoever that you can find extreme violence in Islam going back to Muhammad, that you can find these traits in the Quran, that you can find them in the life of Muhammad, that you can find them in Islamic tradition, that you can find them in Islamic history. There's no question about that. Maybe not exactly what ISIS is doing, but close enough that they could draw their inspiration from it. On the flip side, there is no question that you can also find in the Quran, in the life of Muhammad, in Islamic tradition, a peaceful side, a more conciliatory side, a side that at the least says there should be no coercion in religion. And you can find that through Islamic history. And that's why there are many Islamic leaders who together renounce Islamic terrorism. And they're not just doing it as a ploy. They're not just doing it so as to... They're not just doing it so as to win the favor of non-Muslims or to be deceitful. And listen, you can talk to people who have studied Islam for decades. You could talk to people who have worked with Muslims for decades. You could talk to religious Muslims, and you'll understand what I'm saying. What I'm saying is accurate. And by the way, we're just going to have I get a couple minutes where I can address this. So I will I'll bring on my guest shortly. So you want to hear this interview on gay awareness. It's going to be an eye-opener, and it's an important new book. In fact, I'll tell you how you can get hold of the book directly through our ministry. But that being said, Ted Cruz has come up with a proposal that there should be more police presence and surveillance in Muslim neighborhoods so as to root out the bad guys and protect everyone else. The theory being that if all of Islam is not radical, that if all of Islam is not bent on murder and destruction, that if all of Islam is not in the image of ISIS, if all of Islam is not practicing jihad, then moderate Muslims should welcome this. Or they would call themselves mainstream Muslims, that they would say, great, this is for our good. You're not discriminating against Muslims, but there are radicals among us. Some of them are preaching in mosques. Some of them are secretly putting together terrorist cells. So this could be a healthy presence in our midst, and this presence in our midst could stop the murder of innocent men, women, and children. The first victim who has been identified as a victim of the Brussels attacks was the mother of 3-year-old twins. Think of the joy of giving birth to those twins. Think of the relationship between mother and 3-year-old twins. I don't know anything else about the rest of the family. And now blown up killed, murdered. Why? What did she do? What did she do that has any connection whatsoever to Islam? Nothing, according to everything we know, except she happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. Why the people of Brussels and people in the airport? Maximum terror attack to kill the most people, kill, maim, destroy the most lives in retaliation for Brussels police and security arresting one of the Paris terror attack masterminds. This was clear retaliation, and some felt they struck earlier than they wanted to in case this guy was going to talk and give up information. So the proposals, outcry, everybody, New York City police chief furious, and President Obama denouncing it as un-American. Whereas, hang on, you're talking about weeding out radicals. Tragically, a couple months ago, the people of Brussels, because they felt they were getting a bad hit in the media, because they felt that they were not, they were getting bad PR, and people were afraid to come to Brussels and to Belgium because of the terror attacks that took place in November. So they started this campaign. It's really very, very sad to see now. And we have friends in Brussels, grads from our ministry school. We have many co-workers in Europe. And so this is dear to our heart. One of our grads from our ministry school was at the airport yesterday in Brussels when this happened. Yeah. That's how I first found out, not through the news, but through him being there. So this hits close to home. Many of you know my wife Nancy lost her brother, Douglas, at the World Trade Center, 9/11. So these are not just abstract things we're talking about. And March 18th is the fourth year anniversary of the martyrdom of one of our grads, one of our spiritual sons, who was killed by Al-Qaeda terrorists in the Middle East as he was serving the Muslim community there and reaching them with the gospel. And here these radical Muslims killed them. So I don't say anything here in the abstract. Nothing at all in the abstract. It's all very concrete to me. But the people of Brussels had this phone put up where you could call from anywhere around the world, and there was this big sign, answer the phone, and would ring. Whoever's there, tourist, local, they'd answer the phone. The person would say, I'm calling from Russia. I'm calling from Spain. I'm calling from Brazil. I'm calling from the United States. I'm calling from Canada. How's everything? Oh, it's wonderful. It's beautiful. You should come here. There's no terrorism. No, there's no terrorism. Just come to Brussels. And here, now the Brussels security saying, yeah, we had inadequate resources to devote to weeding out the terror groups. Hence, absolute horrific tragedy. And with better security, perhaps it could have been avoided. That's what Senator Cruz called for. Surprising that there's this level of outcry in light of the very, very real threat. And it's to say, okay, let's weed out the bad guys. Let's do that to help and to protect everybody else, to protect, in that sense, the good Muslims from the bad ones. 866-34-TRUTH. I've got time for one call. We'll go to Boston. Brian, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Doctor. Hey, I just want to say, I you know, respectfully, because, you know, I do have my, you know, the stance of Christianity and everything. But I do want to say, I do think you're under... I don't know if this is the right word, underselling this Islam thing. I've listened to a lot of people. There's a Bill Warner from Political Islam, who's I believe he's a Christian man, speak on this. He's got his own website. And I've listened to Kamal Saleem speak on Islam. He's an ex-Hamas fighter who had direct contact with the Saudi royal family. And I think you're way off on what you're saying about Islam. Are they all wanting to blow themselves up and kill people? No. But when push comes to shove, and ISIS rolls in, they're on ISIS's side, and we've seen that over and over again in the military, where, you know, I was just talking to a guy who was in Afghanistan yesterday, and he said the whole battalion that they trained decided to defect and go to Islam. They taught this stuff from a little boy, just like, you know, like if you're in Catholicism or something, you're raised up, and they're taught all about this, and jihad is the only sure way to get in the presence of Allah. And I think you're
right.
Really
right, but gee, but Brian, first thing, right? Number one, there are different streams of Islam. There are many, many different streams of Islam. In the Middle Eastern country, which I can't mention, where our spiritual son was martyred, a grad from our ministry school. The next day, there were mass protests of Muslims marching down the street, risking their own lives, holding up signs saying, "This is not Islam. It was not a, it's not a crime here to be a Christian." They were renouncing Al-Qaeda. Yes, for sure, there is assurance of going to Allah's presence, dying in a holy war. But holy war is not blowing yourself up at an airport. Millions of Muslims renounce it. I have books by Muslim scholars renouncing Islamic terrorism. So if America was invaded by foreign troops and an American died fighting for his or her country, that would be the equivalent of legitimate holy war for a Muslim. Anyway, I appreciate the comments. Gotta go.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. Tell you what, I'm going to grab another call or two on the Islamic issue here, and then we're going to switch subjects. So we go to Kenny in New York. Welcome to The Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
That's good. I was listening to the comment about Ted Cruz and what he had, what he's suggesting to do as a Black American, as a pastor as well. You know, I can agree with a lot of the other statements he had made, but when it comes to trying to surveillance a specific religion, you know, what's going to happen when we get, when as our country starts to get more evolved in terms of more people, different cultures starting to get in Congress, and they say, oh, well, we don't trust Christians or we don't trust other groups, because we had had terrorists in David Koresh. We had, Jim Jones. We've had some Christians that have did some things that were pretty radical also. And thinking about that, what will be next? Will they go to race after that? What will be the next step?
All right, but Kenny, listen, I appreciate that, but let's think about it. You can't compare David Koresh and Jim Jones. Jim Jones had nothing to do with Christianity, started a complete cult, went to Guyana, and they killed themselves. David Koresh was a cult leader. There was no theology. Listen, in mosques all over America, there is a message being preached that leads to violence and death. There are several hundred million Muslims who hold to a theology that wants to kill unbelievers. There is no question that there is an attempt. Go to the website, The Religion of Peace, and look at how many thousands of terror attacks have taken place in the last 5 years from Muslims around the world, country after country after country after country after country. So since we know it exists, and the majority of Muslims say we renounce this, we're peace-loving, it's totally legitimate to say, okay, we know what's going on. We know where these terrorist cells are based. They're in these Islamic communities. Let's help root them out. And I would absolutely welcome it. If I was a religious Jew and there were several million Jews that were advocating terrorism and preaching it and wanting it to practice it, and they were hiding in my community, I'd want them rooted out any way possible. So this is to protect the good. Yeah, go ahead.
How do you actually implement something of such a nature? Because now you would have to go into people's personal home, which means personal mosque, or I would say mosque. You'd have to go into their personal space, because nothing will ever be done on the sidewalk. You will not find a terrorist standing on the sidewalk passing bombs or doing anything crazy. So it would be an invasion going to a whole nother level to do something like that, where, I mean, to me, when you start to look at it, we're starting to go into people's privacy, when I think if we just strengthen our immigration laws and we start to vet people a lot better and start to deal with the issues that they're, that you have a community that feels like they have a need to do this. But the question is, why? We never deal with the why. We always deal with the after effect.
No, but the why is easy. In other words, you have to understand, Ted Cruz and his team and any of these political leaders have had years of interaction with security people, with intelligence people. Senator Cruz has served in those capacities. In other words, there is a fleshed out, clear-headed thought process that's saying there is a way to do it. It's not talking about just random, like racial profiling kind of things. It's not talking about that at all. It's talking about instead ways to look. We in Brussels talk to the families who are in shock and mourning right now. Okay, people from different countries and natives of Belgium. They're in shock and agony and mourning. Their lives are absolutely torn to shreds. And what we know now is that Brussels did not have sufficient manpower. They've admitted they did not have sufficient manpower to track down the terrorists that were in their midst. Forget the immigration issue. We likely have several hundred thousand radicals in America now, or at least tens of thousands of radicals in America now, many of whom are being trained, and many of whom, with better surveillance and intelligence, will be found out. So that's what's being called for. And I think it's best to look at the larger picture. It is a part of radical Islam. Radical Islam is found all over America. There are communities that even enforce Sharia law within their own Islamic communities. And you're in New York. I'm sure you've got some radicals right there in Brooklyn. You know, that's and then the goal is.
I believe you probably have them all over, but you're right. You're right. But in the same token, even though I disagree, because I think you're starting to open up a slippery slope of what will be the next step. But it still was great speaking to you. I really appreciate you taking my call.
Oh yeah, I love your spirit, man. It's great speaking with you. And of course, we have to be concerned about the very issues that you raised: targeting, profiling. Absolutely. Thank you, sir, for the call. All right, one more call. We go to Dennis in New Jersey. Welcome to the Line of Fire. Hello, Dennis. Are you there? I guess not. All right. Tell you what. I'm going to introduce a powerful new book to you, and then want to tell you where you can get this book. And it's a book that needed to be written. We're switching subjects now completely from radical Islam, just because I've got a couple minutes before the break here. An important new book called Gay Awareness. And this book was written in particular to reach out to young people struggling with same-sex attraction. In particular, that is the focused audience. And if you want to draw a circle within the circle and say, in particular, it would be those who want to follow Jesus and are struggling with same-sex attraction and are asking the question, God, is this right in your sight? Did you make me like this? Do I have to be single the rest of my life? Can you change me? Could I have a loving relationship with someone of the same sex? It's written with love, it's written with truth, and it's written with great power because of the love and truth and the scripture. And I wrote the foreword to the book, so I went through it very, very carefully. But let me just say this. To me, the highlight of the book was the amazing stories, the amazing testimonies. Lives dramatically and radically changed through the gospel. I'm talking about men and women who for years were caught up in homosexual practice and are now free and changed. The book, Gay Awareness, you can get it on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore. If you don't have it, you can ask for it. The author is Landon Schott, S-C-H-O-T-T. The name of the book, Gay Awareness. Now, some of you will be signing off shortly, but you can keep listening at AskDrBrown.org, A-S-K-D-R-Brown.org. The next half hour, I'll be speaking with Landon Schott about the book, Gay Awareness.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the line of fire, 866-348-7884. My guest, Landon Schott, young man in his early 30s, married with a few little children, done ministry in many, many circles, many great open doors over the years, ministers in particular to young people. He's written an important book, Gay Awareness, and it leads to a very important question. Landon, welcome to the line of fire.
Hey, it's great to be here, Dr. Brown. Thanks for having me.
All right, Landon, you know that once you tackle a subject like this, you're going to be hated by a lot of people that didn't even know you before. You're going to have doors close on you that used to be open. You're going to have people that used to stand with you not standing with you because it's just too hot a topic and too much controversy. Therefore, why touch it? Why did you write this book?
Because I love gay people and God loves gay people. And the church has done such a poor job addressing the issue, and especially not many young voices at all are going in starting the conversation. And there's so many people's lives in the balance. There's so many individuals that this is their real temptation. It's a real struggle. It's tormenting, you know, it affecting every part of their life. And there, it's worth it. It's worth it for the lives of these people that are getting changed and set free and transformed. And so if my reputation is on the line and friendships are on the line, then what an easy price to pay when so many lives are going to be changed for the glory of God.
Yeah, it is a small price to pay ultimately. But have you seen any of that happen leading up to the book, asking for folks if they might endorse the book or folks that used to associate with you maybe distancing themselves a little bit from you because of it?
Of course. You know, I've had, you know, close pastor friends of mine tell me they're not going near it. You know, I was blown away as the book went out on Monday and became an Amazon a number one bestseller day one. How many of my friends did post, did say nothing, you know, and these are, you know, people that I love and have done life and ministry with. And it's very real. You know, and I get it. I know what's on the line, and I know what's at stake, but Jesus said to make yourself up of no reputation. And so if we just have to lay down our reputations to reach people, again, I think that's worth it. So absolutely, I've experienced it. I'm experiencing it more and more. But what I've also found is that when you step out and champion righteousness, you know, David only killed one giant, but a generation of giant slayers known as mighty men were raised up to take on giants after them. So what I found is that when you will take on giants in your generation, others will follow suit.
It's absolutely true. It sounds like what Billy Graham said, that courage is contagious. So when one man strengthened, the backbones of others are stiffened in the process. Landon, we've got a minute before this next break, but are you hearing reports from people who've read the book, who struggled with homosexuality, who say, I can't say this is right, I'm not sure, I'm struggling, they've read the book. Are you hearing testimonies from people who've read it already?
I've had one gay guy call me and say, Landon, I can't believe how kind and loving. He was crying and he said, I've never heard a non-affirming author speak this kindly to me and my community. Other individuals that have struggled with it said, I wish I had this book 20 years ago. Another friend of mine that lived the gay lifestyle for years said, Landon, this is going to bring revival to the gay community. So already tons of reports. And also, this is the coolest thing, is heterosexual friends of mine are reading it, say, man, Landon, I'm convicted, because I address heterosexual sin in the church first before even talking about homosexual practice, and just saying, man, you know, I was convicted. I need to make sure I'm living a godly, holy life pure before the Lord. So getting amazing feedback already.
All right, friends, we're going to share some of the testimonies that are in the book and lay out some of the theology and ask Landon his own experience, his own background. Where's he been? Who's he interacted with? The new book, Gay Awareness. If you are a young person with questions about homosexuality, struggling, if you're a parent, if you're a pastor, leader, very important book. Youth leaders, every one of you, get the book today.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the broadcast. The subject, a new book by Landon Schott, Gay Awareness. Landon, a couple of questions for you to put out right from the outset. You said you love gay people. Do you know any gay people? I mean, you're a church kid. Yeah. You're raised in the Lord. Do you even know gay people? Have you ever met them and talked to them? And that's a common thing that we always hear. Oh, yeah, you love us, sure. What's your own background?
Born and raised in the house of God, pastor's kid. Grew up in ministry, started doing ministry from a very young age, and grew up in Seattle. And I was always drawn to the gay community. I'd go get my hair cut in Capitol Hill, which is the center of the gay community there, go have coffee there, hang out there all the time. And I've just had a draw and a love for this community. And then I've intentionally reached out. I got close friends that claim to be gay Christians and some that don't even claim to be Christians at all. And so absolutely, because I've just intentionally reached out to individuals. You know, I travel full time and I got a young family that has my full attention, but I, wherever I go, however I can, always try to make sure that I reach out and befriend people where I can.
And do you see that when you walk in love, people recognize it?
Absolutely. You know, it's so hard when you're on social media or the news clips and people are just yelling and posting mean things back and forth. And that's why it's so important that you have to be engaged in real relationship. And this book isn't for the activists. It isn't for the people that just love sound bites and want to fight. This is for the individuals that either struggle with same-sex attractions, that have a fear of the Lord, that want to serve the Lord, or the individuals that love people that have these temptations and attractions, and they love God, and they want to reach them. These are people we're engaged with. These are people we're doing life with. And I don't know someone that doesn't know someone that has friends, family members, or close loved ones that this is their temptation and their attractions. And so we got to help them and equip them and teach them on how you remain unrelenting in your love for people while remaining unwavering in your loyalty to God's word.
Mm, well said. What would you say are the two wrong extremes that we see in the church today, if I could say it in general terms, to the left and to the right?
Yeah, either you're saying nothing at all because you're either scared speechless or you're not willing to lose anything to help people, and you don't want PR directors and lawyers and emails and Facebook posts, and you want to be liked and popular. And I understand we're living in the day of popularity, and I wear skinny jeans and have, you know, a cool haircut too. But there's a day that's coming where your popularity and your Christianity cannot walk hand in hand. You know, Jesus said they're going to hate you because they hated me. Why do they hate Jesus? Because what he said. What are they going to hate you? Because of the words that you stand by. Jesus says, if you deny me and my words, it's not denying the existence of Jesus. It's denying what he said. And so, you know, my challenge to a lot of Christians is don't be afraid. Stay, you know, join the conversation. The entire world is talking about it. I'm sitting here in front of my computer scrolling down Yahoo and article after article. And it has to be more than just you, Dr. Brown, and I that are engaged in the conversation. So the first thing is not saying anything because of fear. And then the second is the affirming of. And, you know, well, God is love and God loves everyone. If you love people, people love each other, then why can't they be together? Well, you know, love wins. Jesus won 2,000 years ago. We're about to celebrate that on Easter. But I love what you say, Dr. Brown. Love warns. You wrote that in the foreword of the book. And if we love people, we will truly warn them and help teach them. You know, I love what the Bible clearly tells us to do. It's all scripture is used for the teaching, the training, you know, helping individuals live holy, godly lives. And so the two examples is either the hateful, mean approach or the affirming approach. And we got to be in the middle where the people are loving them.
Right. So it's one thing to say the Bible clearly condemns homosexual practice. It clearly does. There's no wavering on it. I'm quite sure that if not for the sexual revolution of the 60s, leading into the gay revolution and other things like that, if not for that, no one would be even imagining for a split second that the Bible permitted or blessed committed same-sex relationships. So yes, it is true that the Bible condemns homosexual practice, but that's not the only thing that God's word says about this. And the fact is, we're not just talking about an issue or a practice. We're talking about people. And one pastor made the comment to me that when our generation, so I'm 60, we hear the word homosexuality, we think an issue. When a teen today hears the word homosexuality, he or she thinks a person. And of course, it's both. It's an issue and it's a person. But in this book in particular, you're really reaching out to people, not talking so much about gay activism in the society. You touch on that, but that's not the focus. The focus is, what does the word say and what does this mean to individuals struggling in this area? And Landon, as you know, the biggest surprise to me in the book, kind of the bonus, the unexpected bonus that just blessed me and that stood out from every other book I've read or written, because I've written on this as well, was the powerful testimonies that you include as part of the narrative in the book. And some of these are multi-year testimonies, not just like the day before you wrote the book, someone called and said, I think I'm changed. No, these are deep things God did in people's lives over a period of years. Can you give us one? I'm sure there are a bunch in your mind, but one that just jumps out at you right now, a testimony that you include in the book, Gay Awareness.
Yeah, I think I included, 13 or 14 stories in the book. But one of them that just jumps out right away is the pastor's kid. And grew up in the house of God. Parents were divorced, got divorced. Mom left the family, was sexually molested as a child. That turned into curiosity in high school. And always knew was wrong, knew what the Bible said. And one day just said, you know, forget you, Mom, forget you, Dad. I'm gay. I'm going to go live this lifestyle. And literally, as he was driving away from his parents, I get goosebumps every time I tell this story, his father was in the driveway running after him, his father, who was a pastor, and he literally left his dad in the dust. And he moved away, and he was a champion amongst his gay friends, moved across the state to a new city, moved to the gay district, and he became the most popular guy in his community, the pastor's kid who left his father in the dust. And he said that it was fun for a season, and it was exciting for a season. And but here's the thing, is his father not only was a good father, but he was a man of prayer. And his youth ministry was a youth ministry of prayer. And Dr. Brown, they would have revival prayer nights. And one day they took a young teenager, stick him in the middle of the youth ministry, and the entire youth ministry laid hands on him and used the young teenager standing in the middle to stand in the gap for this kid. And they all prayed and asked the Lord to speak to him. Well, that night he had a radical dream where the Lord woke him up in a dream. He gets out of bed, laying next to his boyfriend, who he was in bed with at the time, goes and stands in front of the mirror, and he says, what am I doing? And he goes and calls his dad, and his dad said, son, come home. And he went and he repented from the lifestyle. The Lord told him to get baptized again, so he went and got baptized, just being obedient to what God told him specifically to do. And now he's in full-time ministry, he's married, and he's about to have his first son. And here's the craziest thing, is that the girl he's married to today was one of the girls standing in the youth church, laying hands on the boy. She was interceding for her husband and didn't even know it would be him one day. You know, and he's happily married, and he's going to go on TV with me here next week and share his story. But so many stories of people that were embracing all this homosexual life had to offer, but now they're living what Jesus has to offer. Crazy, awesome, powerful testimonies.
Amazing. And friends, there are a bunch of them in the book. I knew that the quality of the book would be solid. I knew that Landon would bring together grace and truth, so it would be full of love and full of biblical standards. And again, as you mentioned earlier, you deal with sexual sin, starting with heterosexuals, starting in the world in which you and I live, and speaking of compromise and sin in the church, and saying that's where we have to start if we're purging, if we're purifying, if we are repenting. But you've read my book, Can You Be Gay and Christian? You've read other books. You read Matthew Vine's book, The Poster Boy for Gay Christianity These Days. What makes your book different? Obviously, you've read the books on the other side of the issue, but the books on the same side of the issue, like mine, what makes your book different, either in terms of your audience or the thrust of the book?
You know, I was super intimidated. Dr. Brown, you're not only a friend, but you're a mentor of mine. I've read almost every one of your books and all of your books on sexuality and hyper grace, and you're so brilliant. And, you know, when I started thinking about, man, I'm going to write a book and I'm going to ask Dr. Brown to forward it, it was intimidating because you're so intelligent. And my book's not a scholarly book. You know, I cite all of your books, and your readers got to go and get that research side of things. But that's not who I am. I'm not a scholar. I'm not a debater. I'm a minister. And the Holy Spirit leads me and speaks to me. And so I took my experiences and years of ministry and dealing with people and my interactions with people and how the Lord just connected the dots. And in all of the stories, when I'm dealing with love and marriage and judgment and identity and all of these themes and even the demonic that make up this book, just putting all of these stories in the power and the presence of God, and even what the Holy Spirit spoke to my spirit on the rainbow. And when you read this book, you're going to feel the presence of God as the Holy Spirit talks to you.
All right, friends, the book, Gay Awareness, I wrote the foreword to it that tells you I believe in it. The author, Landon Schott. We'll talk some practical things when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am speaking with Landon Schott, his new book, Gay Awareness. You can order it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Get it at your local bookstore. It is written in particular for young people, although youth pastors should get it. I think pastors and leaders, parents will be blessed by it. Young people in particular struggling with homosexuality or wanting to minister to those struggling with homosexuality. Landon, let's say that you meet someone, this person is 18 years old, they say, look, as long as I've had sexual romantic feelings, I'm attracted to the same sex. I love the Lord. I want to live for God. This hasn't gone away. I can't imagine being by myself the rest of my life. I've read other books that says that God is not against loving committed homosexual relationships, that love is love, and that love does no harm to its neighbor, and this seems to be liberating for me. But now I'm confused, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do, what God requires of me. What do you say to that person?
Here's what the Bible says: to not worry about tomorrow, but tomorrow will worry about itself. And it's not about choosing a sexuality. It's not about heterosexuality versus homosexuality. It's about holiness. And living a life of holiness is lived one day at a time. But more than that, it's lived one thought at a time. The Bible teaches us to take every thought captive and to make it obedient to Christ. And what I found is individuals let their minds wander, which lets their feelings wander, and then they start looking for something that will support their feelings. You'll find a false doctrine, you'll find a false teaching that will support anything and everything. But as Christ followers, God gave us his word, and that should be the lamp into our feet and a light into our path. And so we have to choose to follow Jesus every day, pick up our cross, deny ourselves. And for some of you, it might be a season, like the story I just told of the young man, where for a season he had to do that until he's living in complete and total freedom now. But it's about following Jesus with everything that you have and making sure that you're pleasing the Father with our life.
Right. So basically, you're not going to treat this as something special and unusual. You're going to treat this as part of fallen human nature, part of this world, part of what the devil wants to do to destroy lives, which can come in 1,000 different forms, and call that person to submit to the Lord today instead of thinking, well, 30 years from now, am I still going to be single, or how can I be celibate? What hope do you have for this person in terms of the power of the gospel to actually change people? Because a lot of Christians are afraid to talk about that. They don't want to disappoint someone. Maybe they've made the mistake of, you know, a guy gets saved, he comes out of homosexuality, and you think, man, he's got to meet my sister. She's a beautiful gal. She loves the Lord. She's single. She's got a great personality. As if that's going to cure him of homosexuality, then it just makes things worse. And you put pressure on people to go from homosexual to heterosexual as opposed to homosexual to holiness. But is there real hope for transformation? Okay, you got a few powerful testimonies in the book. Can we actually expect this?
You know, is anything impossible with God? You know, and here's what we do is we limit God by telling God how we were born, how we're going to live, and what the end result is. You know, even when you pray, we're supposed to pray the perfect will of the Father. And I believe in a supernatural gospel. I believe in a gospel that brings power and life and life transformation. And the same gospel, the same power of God that set people free in the New Testament, the same God that healed people and blind eyes, limbs, dead people, impossible situations. Do you mean to tell me that God can heal, transform, set people free, raise the dead, heal the blind, et cetera, et cetera, but he can't heal and change and set free what you call your sexual orientation or your temptations or your feelings? I Dr. Brown, I've seen so many people be transformed with the power of God. And it's, sometimes it's not about just how we feel, but sometimes it's true love, agape love, and that's obeying God, making the decision, making the choice to forsake all to follow Jesus.
Is this just basic New Testament discipleship we're talking about?
Absolutely. This is, you know, you look at persecuted church and what's going on in other nations and people that are giving up their lives for the sake of the gospel. Of course we can give up our sexual temptation, both heterosexual and homosexual. This is about denying all, giving up everything for Jesus who gave us everything.
What if someone says, but I'm not giving up something, this is who I am? What's your response?
Say that one more time. The phone cut out.
Sure. If someone says, look, this is not about giving up something. This is who I am fundamentally as a human being. What do you say?
Well, the Bible says to don't embrace who you are and who the world tells you who you are, but to deny who you are and look like Jesus, reflect Jesus. That no matter how you were born, John 3, we must be born again. So again, it's not about choosing homosexuality or heterosexuality. You know, the gay-affirming people always ask me, when did you choose heterosexuality? That's the wrong question. It's when did you choose Christianity? When did you choose to follow Jesus? And that's what it's about.
So do you think it's an error if someone says, okay, I'm same-sex attracted, but I'm living a celibate life right now, but I identify as a gay Christian? Do you think that's an error?
Where does the Bible say we're gay Christians? Where does the Bible say that we're heterosexual Christians? Does it say that we're drunken Christians or lying Christians? No, we're Christians. Look, all of us have temptations. You know, my wife is gorgeous. I still have to guard my eyes. Well, I love football. I still have to turn the channel and make sure that I'm not fixing my eyes on things. Why? Because Jesus said if you look at a woman lustfully, you're committing adultery in your heart. And so I still have temptations, but I'm not a heterosexual. I'm not an adulterer. I'm not a lustful Christian. I'm a Christ follower every day utilizing the grace of God to empower me to live a Christ-centered, Christ-pleasing life.
And we've got about a minute. If a youth pastor gets this book, will it help that youth pastor minister to the kids in his youth group? Because this is something, as we all know, that comes up everywhere, and people struggling with these issues. Will this book equip him to minister more effectively?
This is going to equip a youth pastor, a parent, a family member, anyone who this relates to, which, Dr. Brown, you and I know, is almost everyone. It will equip you how to respond, what the Bible truly says, breaking down of all of these issues between judgment and identity, love, all of these things, and equip you to not only help people, but you yourself continue to walk in the freedom that God has for you.
My friends, the new book, Gay Awareness, I highly recommend it. Get a copy of the book. You can go right now online, Amazon.com, and order there. If you prefer Barnes & Noble, you can get the book there. You can get it in your local bookstore. If your Christian bookstore doesn't have it, ask for it. And by the way, as I told you, Landon, my wife Nancy has very high standards. She was impressed with the production, with the cover of the book. I thought, man, it's nicely done in a way that's going to draw people in. A great message. Just the cover of the book alone has a great message. Landon, may the Lord be with you. I'm sure you're going to be blown away by the testimonies of transformed lives you hear in the coming years. God bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
All right, my bottom line today, Jesus is still in the radical life-changing business. Whoever, wherever, call out and deliverance is at hand. Radical Islam. What is it? Is it true Islam? Is it the only Islam? We'll focus on that today right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We know that legislating morality is constitutional. In fact, you can't not legislate morality. The only question is whose morality. Next question is it enforceable? Can you make people be good? Many people say you can't make people good, so why even try? We tried it with prohibition.
That's the voice of Dr. Frank Turek, friend and colleague. You've heard him even guest hosting the show for me. This week, 80% off our School of Cultural Engagement. Six classes, about 7 hours per class, cultural apologetics, with Frank Turek, Sexual Purity with Joe Dallas. It's Time to Rock the Boat with me, John Rankin, Only Genesis. 6 weeks of classes on audio, on CD, or digital download. The price is low to start, but we have completely dropped the price to be a blessing this week. 80% off. This is not an audio typo. Go to AskDrBrown.org to take advantage of that. All right, this is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire. I was not live yesterday for two reasons. One, I suddenly come down sick on Monday. It felt like a bad cold, but really bad. I didn't realize that I got zapped with a cold, but bad allergies at the same time. Didn't realize till yesterday, late afternoon, that I had allergies as well. Once I addressed that, I started feeling night and day better. So I didn't want to muddle my way through a broadcast not being well in light of the Brussels attacks, the terror that was going on. I knew I needed to be absolutely focused and ready to do the show fully. Because I had discussed the issue of radical Islam with my friend and colleague, Dr. James White, who's studied Islam for decades now, I thought we could replay those broadcasts that were informative. So I hope you were blessed and helped by them. But we are going to focus today on radical Islam. I do want to take your calls. My position is that radical Islam is a representative stream of Islam. In other words, going all the way back to Muhammad, you can find a stream that gives way to this type of extreme violence. On the flip side, there's another stream of Islam that goes back to Muhammad that would be against this violence. They are both found in the Quran. They are both found in Islamic tradition. And neither one is the ultimate one in Islamic theology. So you have Islamic theologians who support radical Islam and Islamic theologians who renounce it. So I reject the view that radical Islam is not true Islam. It is an expression of Islam that is valid. I reject the view that all Islam is radical because that is not true. And that's why, again, there are Muslim leaders. I'm talking about Orthodox Muslim leaders who pray five times a day and are totally devoted to Quran and Allah, and they renounce groups like ISIS and radical Islam. I've got an article on that that will also help you understand the hatred that comes our way. It's called Radical Islam is at War with the Rest of the World. You can read it by going to AskDrBrown.org and clicking on latest articles. Okay, question for you. How do you feel about Donald Trump's proposal that we use torture, basically whatever we need to use to fight these terrorists? That's the Donald Trump proposal. The Ted Cruz proposal is we need to up surveillance, police presence and surveillance in Muslim communities in America to root out the radicals, with the assumption being that the vast majority of American Muslims are not radicals, that they too would oppose radical Islam. So this is a way to root out the terrorists, which for the most part are to be found in the midst of Islamic communities. What do you think of that proposal? 866-348-7884. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is one continuous assault on all of us. Their basic demand is that we should simply disappear. Well, my friends, that's not going to happen.
The voice of Prime Minister, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, speaking at the AIPAC meeting this week. And I posted a couple of articles, a graphic, all within a few hours of the horrific terrorist attacks in Belgium yesterday. And one of the articles was about four Bible translators in the Middle East who were savagely killed by Muslim terrorists, from what we know, shot, beaten to death. Two of them fell on top of the lead translator. And when they fell on top of the lead translator, they were subsequently beaten to death, and the translator was saved. I mean, extraordinary suffering, extraordinary heroism in the midst of it. And then I posted a graphic showing four pictures of Israelis among the 30-plus who've been killed in the last few months, with over 400 wounded, two men, two women, killed by Islamic terrorists, Palestinian terrorists. And as Prime Minister Netanyahu is indicating, this is all one and the same stream. The radical Muslims that are blowing up innocent men, women, and children in Brussels are no different than the Palestinian terrorists who are murdering innocent Israelis, no different than the Boston Marathon bombers, no different than those who crashed planes into the World Trade Center and Pentagon. In other words, it is the same hateful, radical, murderous version of Islam. 866-34-TRUTH, the number to call. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. The revolution we call for is one that overcomes hatred with love, one that overcomes evil with good, one that overcomes lies with truth, not one that responds to violence with violence, not one that responds to terrorism with terrorism. Yes, there's a place for law enforcement. Yes, there's a place for military. The revolution we speak of as followers of Jesus is not a military revolution, but a gospel revolution. It's the ultimate solution while we work with law enforcement, while we work with the government, while our military does what it can, while counterterrorism does what it can. We have our job to do as well. And of course, ultimately, our greatest weapon is prayer. 866-348-7884. Donald Trump has said, basically, do what you have to do. Torture doesn't matter. Do what you have to do to stop terrorism. As he's referred to, we have to have more of a level playing field. So not doing exactly what they do, but whatever we need to do. And interestingly, as abhorrent as those comments are, because you don't defeat terrorism by becoming like the terrorists, getting down to their level, that defeats everyone in the process. And as much as the military could not rightfully carry that out because it is a violation of American and international law, that we're just going to use torture, whatever other means we have to, and start hacking people's legs or arm, who knows what, you know, do what you have to do to get testimony out of them. Interestingly, that's drawing very little public comment or controversy, whereas Senator Cruz's proposal that there needs to be more policing and surveillance of Muslim neighborhoods to root out the radicals, that's getting a ton of attack and controversy. So we'll talk about that. But I want to hear your thoughts, 866-348-7884. Your thoughts as an American, maybe as an American Muslim, maybe as someone who's close to terrorism in the army, the military, maybe someone who's served in the midst of radical Islam. I'd like to hear from you as well, 866-348-7884. Listen to Prime Minister Netanyahu, Dennis, clip number five, a longer clip where he now articulates the very same thing that I was saying, but he articulates it as he can, and only he can, as the Prime Minister of Israel. Clip number five.
The chain of attacks from Paris to San Bernardino, to Istanbul, to the Ivory Coast, and now to Brussels, and the daily attacks in Israel. This is one continuous assault on all of us. In all these cases, The terrorists have no resolvable grievances. It's not as if we could offer them Brussels or Istanbul or California or even the West Bank. That won't satisfy their grievances, because what they seek is our utter destruction and their total domination. Their basic demand is that we should simply disappear. Well, my friends, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that is obviously not going to happen. The idea that, well, if we're just friendly and nice, this will go away, it's not going away. It is an irrational hatred. It is part of the radical Islamic mentality that wants to take over. As I explain in my article, radical Islam is at war with the rest of the world. In Islamic theology, the world is divided into two parts, Dar al-Islam, the world of Islam, and Dar al-Harb, the world of war, the world of conflict. That means that if you live in a Muslim nation and the nation next to you is a non-Islamic nation, that's part of the world of war. You are at war with them one way or another. Now, some will take it beyond ideologically. In other words, we could talk about spiritual warfare. We could talk about we're of God and the whole world is of the evil one. And we can have this us and them mentality, but it is a spiritual ideological mentality. We live in this world. We work in this world. We serve in this world. We're not out to kill the unbeliever. In the Old Testament, the Israelites drove out the Canaanites. In the New Testament, we drive out demonic powers. In the Old Testament, people within Israel were put to death for adultery. In the New Testament, if someone professed to be a follower of Jesus, committed adultery, they would be excommunicated if they wouldn't repent. We're not out to burn witches today or to put Sabbath breakers to death or adulterers to death. So our philosophy and approach is going to be very different under the new covenant and living in America as opposed to ancient Israel. But for a radical Muslim, that neighboring nation, they're at war with them. Let's say that neighboring nation fights Islamic terrorism, then they are the enemy. And whoever you kill among them, they are guilty. Let's say that that neighboring nation is attempting to... Well, let's just say that they're known for their immoral movies. Well, now they are spreading mischief and corruption in the land. They are your enemy. So killing them is doing God service. And if you die in the process, you're guaranteed a place in the world to come. Now, again, I understand that many Muslim theologians reject that approach and say that the jihad that's spoken of is would be, let's say, if another nation attacked a Muslim nation, and the Muslim army fought back against them, then that would be a legitimate holy war, just like a self-defense war here in America. But there are others who say, no, these are the unbelievers, and you kill them, and they will point to texts like in the Quran, Surah 5, verse 33. So chapter 5, verse 33, and it says this, the penalty for those who wage war against Allah and his messenger and strive upon earth to cause corruption is none but that they be killed or crucified, or that their hands and feet be cut off from opposite sides, or that they be exiled from the land. That is for them a disgrace in this world, and for them in the hereafter is a great punishment. So, you can see how Brussels arrests terrorist mastermind from the Paris attacks. They arrest him, capture him. Now you have to retaliate. They have now waged war against Allah. So it doesn't matter who. Innocent mother with children, little baby, stranger flying in from another country. Doesn't matter. Kill them. Acts of terror. That's the way radical Islam thinks. All right, let's go to the phone. Salt Lake City. Terry, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you. I have a couple of comments. Number one, we're not fighting a conventional enemy. We cannot fight the way we used to fight. We either fight to win, or we fight to keep on fighting. I choose that we fight to win. Not only that, but I also believe that I was born and raised a Catholic. After I started reading the Bible, I realized that Catholicism was not where I wanted to wind up. If you're a Muslim, if you're a good Muslim, you have to follow the tenets of the Muslim religion. If you're a bad Muslim, then why are you still a Muslim?
All right, so here's the answer to that. And we'll put the Catholicism question aside. The answer is that they would say you're wrongly interpreting the texts. In other words, they could point to all the verses in the Bible about kill the Canaanites, and we would say, but that was for a certain place in time. They would say the same with the Islamic texts of terror. That was for the days when Muhammad was at war with his enemies. Now that we're not at war, there's peace. But I want to ask you a question. We've got a break here, Terry. If you can stay through the break, I want to ask you a question in terms of, yeah, it's non-conventional warfare, but does that mean anything goes whatsoever? 866-348-7884. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's clear that you're enjoying the game. Your wife in particular seems to be really enjoying the game as a baseball fan.
Well, she was upset about a couple of these.
The great catch in center field didn't sit well. She liked the catch.
You know,
a couple of the calls. Strike zone's a little wide so far, at least on the other side. But, you know, you always have a little home field advantage.
President Obama laughing at the baseball game between the American baseball team and the Cuban national team, which our team won 4-1. And he made brief comments about Brussels and then went on to another speech. And many have been critical of that. So you don't just hang out and go to the game and laugh and enjoy the game when you have a national tragedy of this magnitude. My goal here on this radio show is not to be an Obama basher. That's why, even though I have opportunity to say things like this on a frequent basis, I rarely do. But it's kind of a shameful thing to see, okay, that you're the people of Brussels and you're looking for international support at that moment, people of Belgium. That'd be disconcerting to me personally. We've not led well and set good examples with the rest of the world. 866-348-7884. Talking about dealing with Islamic terror. All right, so Terry, just back to you on the idea of we're not fighting a conventional war. I do believe we have military intelligence that understands we're not fighting conventional war. We have counterterrorism units that understand we're not fighting conventional war. Others like Senator Cruz have said you've got to understand the ideology. You're dealing with radical Islam. ISIS has declared jihad. We need to take it seriously. We need to uproot it where we can in America and fight it around the world. But if you went with the Donald Trump proposal, it's basically saying do whatever it takes because these are bad guys and you got to fight bad guys with bad methods, even if it means breaking our laws and things like that. Do you think that's legitimate?
I do. I believe that we should do whatever it takes to get the intelligence, to get the information that we need. These people, they're putting bombs on buses. They're killing children. They're killing women. They're going into malls and killing people. We've never fought a war like this before. This is very, very different. Listen, when Japan invaded our country, we took care of business, and what threat has Japan been to us since that time?
All right, but, okay, so you feel good about dropping atomic bombs and all of the Japanese men, women, and children that were not hostile,
that they
died. You support that?
I don't feel good about it, but it ended a war.
I understand. Listen, I'm not making as if these are light issues. America did that. It's obviously something that should be debated. But here's the thing. When you say whatever it takes, what if the only way to get a terrorist to talk was to torture his child? Is that okay?
No.
All right. So you would draw
you get
certain
a
lines.
To talk, you torture the terrorist.
But whatever. Right. So why do you think we have laws against that?
So we don't do things like that because we are liable to do things like that. I would certainly, if you're coming against me, come against me. Don't come against my wife and children.
No, I listen. I understand. I wanted to ask because you said, you know, whatever it takes. So whatever it takes to that person. And look, I understand the moral argument. You've got a guy in a prison cell. He knows where a nuclear bomb is going to go off in the heart of L.A. that could cause millions of deaths, and he can stop it if he gives us the information, but he's not willing. Would it be wrong to torture that person however you needed to stop that bomb? I fully understand the moral argument behind it. There's a reason, though, conversely, that there's international law against torture, because obviously, where does one draw the line? And how much intel is needed? What if this person could get us to another person who could get us to another person who could tell us where the bomb was? And you know, so it becomes one of these things where, in the name of saving lives, that we commit atrocities as well. So I
Brown,
listen.
We're at war. We are at war. You fight to win. With your comment about Mr. Trump, no. I don't believe that you torture the family. You go
right. You're kill the families of terrorists. Right. Listen.
No,
I understand it's a war, but don't you think Israel understands that better than any nation on the earth?
Absolutely, there's no doubt about it.
And Israel does not
100%.
Right. Israel also does not resort to torture. And when there has been torture, it's caused a national uproar. In other words, Israel is able to do what it does without violating international law and violating its own ethics standards.
In all fairness to Israel, whatever they do creates an international scene.
Yeah, it does. It does. And look, they get attacked by Amnesty International all the time. But look,
yeah.
Terry, I understand you're not talking about killing the families of terrorists. I understand you're talking about the terrorist himself or herself and doing what needs to be done to extract information to save lives. And I understand your justification for it. Look, the whole waterboarding issue, and is that legit or not? I mean, that's just another discussion in this. And for some who say it's inhumane and it reduces us to monsters and things like that, I do understand it's war. And I do understand that if this is going to save millions of lives, and if it's done within certain parameters, that people can justify. But hey, Terry, thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it. Thank you for the call,
thank
sir.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Thank you.
All right. 866-348-7884. Isn't it interesting, though? Isn't it interesting that Donald Trump's comments, which are far more severe and extreme, that that far more attention is being put on the Cruz proposal. And let me read his words. It's just kind of interesting, isn't it? He said that we need more resources for U.S. police to, quote, patrol and secure Muslim neighborhoods before they become radicalized. And he held to this despite a lot of criticism he's receiving. We saw a horrific terror attack in Brussels. He said, in our prayers this morning are with the families of those murdered, of those wounded. This was yesterday. But what is important is that this was not a lone wolf. That wasn't an isolated attack. It was radical Islamic terrorism. It was ISIS that has declared jihad, that is waging war. Then Cruz pointed to former New York City police unit that targeted Muslims for surveillance as a model for his proposals. And he said that's what they did under Mayor Bloomberg, and it was fruitful. And now under Mayor de Blasio, they disbanded it because of political correctness. So Mayor de Blasio, of course, is going after Cruz on this. And the NYPD commissioner, Bill Bratton, he said Cruz has no idea what the H he's talking about. And Cruz said, yeah, that's what the de Blasio political henchmen say. But NYPD said that it got valuable intelligence from this. How are you going to survey 3 million Muslims? And he says, well, you have communities, for example, in Minnesota. You have communities in Michigan with heavy concentration of Muslims. You have incidents of radical imams preaching jihadism, preaching Islamism. There's a difference between Islam and Islamism. So that's what he's saying to look at. Obviously, it creates a lot of controversy. Obviously, people are going to say, well, now racial profiling and this and that. We'll talk about it right here on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I heard an explosion and all the ceilings is going down. And then I just go under the sink, and then the second explosion went, and then everything is black. And I see, when I go out, I see all the, a lot of people with the blood.
What was you feeling at that moment?
I'm so scared. I feel like it's the end of the world.
Yeah, that, I can't imagine. I've never been in that situation. But that's certainly something that you would feel very, very deeply. This is Michael Brown. We're talking about the terrorist attacks in Brussels yesterday. I was not able to be here live yesterday, came down with a combination of cold and bad allergy, didn't realize what was going on until later in the day and started to sort it out. But we were able to play broadcast from my interviews with Dr. James White about Islam and radical Islam. My newest article, Radical Islam is at War with the Rest of the World, will be helpful, will help you to understand the differences among Muslims on these issues, but the fact that radical Islam does represent a legitimate stream of Islam. It's a stream that other Muslims renounce. 866-348-7884. Do you agree with Donald Trump that when it comes to war like this and torture, do what you got to do to stop the bad guys? Do what you got to do. They're doing bad things. We may have to do bad things. Do you agree with Senator Cruz, who said that in targeted Muslim communities where we know that there is more jihadist activity or jihadist sympathy, that that's where we need to have greater police surveillance, patrolling, looking to weed out these terrorists before they strike and kill. Let's go to clip number 8. This is Malcolm Nance. He's on MSNBC. He is a terrorism expert, and he's talking with Brian Williams about how ISIS in Syria is training people to carry out attacks in places like Belgium and France.
We are now in a strategic campaign by ISIS to destabilize Europe. Paris was just the beginning of this, but over the last 2 years, they've been running operatives back from Syria to Europe, Europe to Syria, and giving them operational experience. That's one thing, but to actually start training cells, bringing those cells back to their home country, the Al-Sufan group estimates that there were 470 operatives, 470 people from Belgium alone, mainly from the Molenbeek section, who have gone to Syria, trained as operatives, and in France believes that they have had as many as 300 ISIS members return to France. What that does is not just disseminate a group of operatives within the country. It allows you to establish not just a terrorist cell, but a constellation of terrorist cells who could be completely compartmented away from each other, who may not know which operation is going on as opposed to the next group. Or in some respects, they could have a logistics pipeline which ties them together, but they don't know when they're going to attack, and they can attack with impunity.
Dennis, grab clip number 4. I want you to hear what President Obama had to say about this. He has been heavily criticized for attending, as planned, a baseball game in Cuba. Of course, there's controversy over the game itself with an American team playing the Cuban national team. Our team won, 4-1. But he made some brief comments about the terrorism and went on kind of just enjoying the game. His philosophy is, hey, terrorism wants to disrupt normal life. We're not going to let it disrupt normal life. Obviously, a lot of controversy with that. Let's listen to what he said. Clip number 4.
The thoughts and the prayers of the American people are with the people of Belgium. And we stand in solidarity with them in condemning these outrageous attacks against innocent people. We will do whatever is necessary to support our friend and ally, Belgium, in bringing to justice those who are responsible. And this is yet another reminder that the world must unite. We must be together, regardless of nationality or race or faith, in fighting against the scourge of terrorism. We can and we will defeat those who threaten the safety and security of people all around the world.
He said that, of course, from Cuba, but noticeably missing was the word radical Islam. Mr. President, why? Identify it. It is radical Islam. Identify it. Call it out. You'll never defeat it. If you don't identify it, call it out and target it.
God of light, hear our cry.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The national anthem of Belgium, so many heavy hearts in that nation and throughout the world over the latest Islamic terrorist attacks. They are radical Islamic attacks. We need to identify them as such. We need to recognize the ideology we're dealing with. We need to recognize where we have it in our own midst, how it spreads around the world, and how it must be defeated. 866-348-7884. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire. Let me just read this quote, then I want to go right to the phones. This is from an Israeli parliamentary member. He said, if in Belgium they continue eating chocolate and enjoying life and continue to appear as great Democrats and liberals and have not decided that some Muslims in their country are organizing terror, they won't be able to fight them. That may sound harsh, but what he's saying is, look, we live in the middle of this. We live literally in Israel in the middle of Islamic terror, literally surrounded by Islamic terror. And you must be vigilant. Yes, Israelis live their lives and they have their cafes and they sit and enjoy life together and they have their weddings and their celebrations and the kids play sports and you go to the mall and all that. But you go to the mall, you go through security when you go to the mall. It's just life there. And there is constant surveillance. Wherever you live, there is some level of surveillance because they must always be vigilant against terror. And it's tragic. It is so, so sad. It is so sad to look at this ad. I link it in my latest article, Radical Islam is at War with the Rest of the World. I link this article where it just shows a couple months ago that the people of Brussels and Belgium put out a PR campaign because after terrorist attacks in November, they were getting bad press and it's not safe and radical Islam is there. So they had these big signs with a phone on them, answer the phone, and you just be walking by and the phone rings. And they got thousands of calls, people calling from around the world. So this is a worldwide campaign, visit Belgium, everything's safe. And you pick up the phone, hello? Hello, I'm calling from Canada. How are things? Oh, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful sunny day and it's beautiful. Is it peaceful? Of course it's peaceful. Yeah, I'm calling over from Brazil. Things are wonderful here. Whoever just pick up the phone and talk, and they're saying, look, you know, you've heard these bad things. Come and see for yourself. It would be the absolute horrific, ironic tragedy if there were people at the airport that were killed, or at the subway station that were killed, that were tourists who had come to Belgium because of the PR campaign and ended up dying of Islamic terror. Better to say, okay, we've got a problem in our midst, and we may not be able to promote tourism the way we used to until we deal with this problem. Let us uproot the radical Muslims in our midst and let every other Muslim in our country, every person of conscience, work with us to uproot radical Muslims. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Bill. Let's go to Nick in Utah. Welcome to The Line of Fire.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Hey, I appreciate your program and everything you do. It's listened to quite a bit. I guess I'd need to preface this by saying, you know, it's a very complicated issue, this whole ISIS deal. You got two areas that you need to look at. One is the spiritual, you know, what God is in control of and what's happening there. And the other, obviously, is the how do we stop these people from the terrorist attacks? My heart breaks just to see the people that are sitting there in frustration. How do we stop this? I think we need to reevaluate. You know, I was a police officer for 20 years, and there's things that you do to get information. I think we need, as a country, and as all these different countries need to come together and say, how do we fight this? And look at maybe imposing or changing the laws to allow us to extract that information. Does that make sense?
So you're saying that in some cases, that torture, that what you're talking about, expanding the law. As Donald Trump had said, expanding the law, that torture would be merited if that's what it's going to take to stop a group like ISIS.
Yeah, I hate to say this on one side on my Christian faith. You know, you don't want to say that, but again, as a police officer, I saw this. They don't play fair. The bad guys don't play fair. And so, yeah, you need to change your laws to meet down to come down to their level.
Isn't that then the problem, that you could end up having all kinds of lawlessness, that you could end up becoming barbaric yourself, that in the name of doing good, you're doing bad yourself? Now, look, I understand when we go to war, it's not pretty. I understand that when we go to war, there are always unwanted civilian casualties, and that the best case scenario, we're killing bad guys. This is not pretty. You know, this is not like, you know, sit at home and lay down in your soft pillow and enjoy life. You're talking about killing bad guys. You're talking about bombing, and people are going to be maimed for life, and they're going to be civilian casualties that were unavoidable, even though you tried to avoid them. So I'm not trying to make this look like some just easy solution type of thing. And yes, it's very difficult and muddled, but if it's ultimately whatever it takes, doesn't that make us guilty of similar crimes to what's being committed against us?
Yeah, it does, and that's where I say we need to group as a coalition of, you know, these people to fight ISIS, and you know, it'd be nice. Again, I go back to it'd be nice if everybody would look at the standard of God, the Bible, what the Word says, and adhere to that. But unfortunately, the ISIS people are not doing that. And we need to say, okay, what can we do within certain parameters? Obviously, we don't want to go out and torture babies, you know, to get that information. And these people that are the ISIS people, they're going to die for their cause anyways. So, you know, we need to figure out the best solution and try to resolve that.
And let me just say this, Nick, just to jump in. I understand that there is a difference when, say, a Muslim terrorist goes to blow himself up in an airport, and he knows he's going to kill innocent people, completely innocent people. And you were able to apprehend his colleague who dropped him off at the airport and was complicit in this, and now you want to extract information from that colleague. That person is guilty of mass murder or being complicit in mass murder, whereas the people who were killed were innocent. So I understand that there's a massive moral difference there. But again, if I go back to Israel again, I mentioned them previously, they will fight terrorism in the hardest possible ways without crossing a certain line where you become demeaned yourself. And where they have crossed lines, they've been criticized for it. Hey, Nick, thank you for the call, for the discussion. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Woodward, Iowa. Russell, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, sir, Michael. I appreciate your program. I bet you get tired of everybody getting on the line and then saying, hey, how are you? Don't you get tired of that?
That's always sweet. That's fine. But go ahead, though. Thank you.
You bet. The reason I'm calling, I was listening to your program again, and today and earlier, one of the gentlemen was saying that we need to do everything possible to defeat this enemy. And you had an interesting conversation with him. He said we ought to get all the military intelligence that we can. Well, as far as I'm concerned, from what I've read and seen on the internet, we have all the intelligence we need to go after these people and defeat them if we wanted to. I saw an overhead photo of somewhere over there in the Middle East where we had bombed a civilian with a drone, civilian building, where they had some intelligence matters in that building. But about a block and a half, or not even that far away, was the ISIS or the ISIL radio command center and a bunch of other stuff, and we didn't blow that away. Our military people were saying Obama does not want to defeat ISIL or ISIS.
The fact is we're not going after them a fraction as aggressively as we can, and if we won't identify them as radical Muslims, then we're going to hamstring ourselves in the process, because we have to understand the ideology and what's behind it and how it's fueled in different ways, and strike out at it, not just militarily, but in other ways as well.
Okay. I understand also the difference between ISIL and ISIS is that Obama can't say that one word, but he can say the other. And the word that he says all the time is the Muslims that are out to annihilate Israel.
But he won't even speak. Of course, ISIS, ISIL, all the same. But he won't even speak about Muslims doing this. He'll say they're not really Muslims, and that's like sticking your head in the sand. And when you're president of the United States, you can't do that.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Be sure to check out my latest YouTube videos. If you don't subscribe to those, just go to my website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the little YouTube icon on the upper right. This way you can subscribe as soon as a new video is out. My last one, Did Saul the Jew Become Paul the Christian? We'll have one up, I think, tonight on Purim, with some fascinating traditions about Purim that you may not be aware of. So make sure you get those as soon as they're out. Easiest way, as I said, is to subscribe. Go to AskDrBrown, AskDrBrown.org, and click on the YouTube icon to do that. While you're there, check out my latest articles, including Radical Islam is at War with the West. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to... We don't go there. Greensboro, North Carolina. Rick, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown, thank you so much. I'll try to be quick. I'm like you, fascinated by the president's unwillingness to use the term radical Islam. But one of the things I've noted, I'm sure I've seen this on more than one occasion, when he's talked about these terrorist attacks, he's said about these people, they're not real Muslims. And I can't imagine anything upsetting them more than that. And he talks about how Guantanamo Bay is a recruiting tool, but to turn to a Muslim and say, you're not a real Muslim, I mean, say that to a Hindu or a Buddhist or anybody else. And I've heard the president actually say that several times, and I've been amazed that media have not questioned. Say, Mr. President, how can you say to someone who claims to be a Muslim that they're not?
That's the thing. In other words, his last concern is insulting radical Muslims. His bigger concern is insulting the rest of the Muslim world. And
yeah,
Muslim
exactly.
allies. And look, you got to remember, he spent part of his life in Indonesia. Indonesia is the world's largest Muslim nation. Well, if you take in terms of population, Indonesia, then the Indian population, the Muslim population of India, and then Pakistan, they're all very close in terms of the biggest Muslim nations in the world. But Indonesia is more secular than Pakistan is. And that's where he spent some of his life. And then there is the intellectual, liberal approach that simply does not recognize the reality of hardline religion. So it's absolutely ridiculous for him to say they're not Muslims. It reminds me of George Bush, basically President Bush, G.W. Bush, when he was talking about the Taliban. And, you know, basically they're misinterpreting the Quran. And I remember watching... it was basically a press conference with Taliban from Afghanistan saying, oh, yeah, the president of the United States is going to tell us how to interpret the Quran. So when you have guys who base their life on the Quran, on the example of Muhammad, on Islamic tradition, on Islamic theology, the head of ISIS, from what we understand, has a Ph.D. In Islamic studies from University of Baghdad in Iraq. I believe that's university. But here he is, lifelong Muslim. And now with a Ph.D. in Islamic studies, and you've got their theologians, you've got mosques all around the world preaching this radical stuff, to say they're not Muslims is complete denial. And look, I saw one cartoon, you know, little graphic where these guys are all in front of some cave, you know, where they just finished saying their prayers and whatever. these Muslim terrorists, and they're looking on the TV, and there's President Obama saying they're not really Muslim, and they're saying, what are we, Mormons? What do you think we are? When you look at the documents they put out and all of the citations from Quran, from Islamic tradition and theology, they can very well stake their claim that they are legitimate Muslims. And there are others who'll say you're misinterpreting the sources. Okay, fine. So you can have that debate. It's like Protestants and Catholics debating who are the real Christians, where you have a lot in common. It's the same. It's the same here. Rick, you're right to highlight this. I agree with you. President Obama has said the notion that the West is at war with Islam is an ugly lie, and all of us, regardless of our faith, have a responsibility to reject it. Well, we'll say this, Mr. President. Radical Islam is at war with the West. That's true. And to deny that is an ugly lie that could actually cost lives. We go to Villa Park, California. Chris, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, I'll be quick. So here we are in Purim, and certainly the spirit of Amalek is an issue. And I'm just looking at this whole situation, and who is Amalek? You know, a descendant of Esau, maybe he's got an axe to grind thinking that there's a blood feud going between the brothers still of Esau and Jacob. But the bigger issue is that God speaks very clearly to the matter of Amalek and what he represents, and it's exactly what you were just talking about. And that is failing to remember the whole picture with God being at the center of it and who each person is. And so that being the case, God says that you're to act harshly towards Amalek and remove that memory and remove that headspace, if you will.
Yeah, so if we think about Exodus, the 17th chapter, where the Amalekites attack the children of Israel after they've come out of Egypt, and God says, remember what they did. So years later, judgment comes on them in their wickedness in 1 Samuel 15, and Saul is told to wipe them out. So on the one hand, that is a one-time only event. In other words, there were specific enemies that were designated for retribution, and at a specific point in time, that retribution came. So that happened once in history, and Israel does not go around annihilating peoples since then. However, what Chris is referring to is in Jewish thought, there is this idea of remember Amalek, remember what they did. So remember what the Nazis did, never again, that you must have that particular mentality, and that even if it's not the same people, there are always enemies wanting to destroy, in particular, wanting to destroy the Jewish people. Hey, thanks for calling, Chris. I'm going to have a video up tonight. It was not on any broadcast. We specially recorded this for you. A short video, probably 5-6 minutes, where I talk about Purim, this biblical festival that's being celebrated right now. If you're not aware of Purim, by all means, read the book of Esther, and you'll find out about it. And as you read the book of Esther, look and see if there's anything missing for a book of the Bible, anything missing. I'll explain it on my video tonight if you're not familiar with where I'm going with that. But the fact of the matter is there are always enemies wanting to destroy. And the physical nation of Israel living in the land of Israel is the evidence of this constant world hatred, and then the radical hatred of radical Islam, and with that, this desire to destroy. On the one hand, we must fight this enemy militarily, as Israel does and as other nations do. On the other hand, we recognize it's a spiritual battle, and we recognize that the gospel is the ultimate antidote. So in the midst of military intervention and justice, we also preach the gospel and we pray for a massive harvest in the Muslim world, including the radical Islamic world. And when these people get saved, they'll gladly give their lives for the gospel. Be sure to check out our very special resource offer this week, our School of Cultural Engagement, 80% off the already low price. Take advantage of it. Download it. Listen when you can. Trust me, you don't want to miss it. AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, let us identify the enemy and let us deal with the enemy clearly.